Hysteria is brought to you by Quince. Lissa, I have been pregnant or postpartum for the last, like, what feels like 4 years.
Mm.
And so my clothing, my summer clothing, is from, like, a long time. It's, like, dated.
It's time for a refresh.
It's time for a refresh. And Quince is giving me a chance to do a little refresh, move into the summer, move into this next season of my life,
mm-hmm.
feeling great, not completely breaking the bank, and looking timeless and stylish. You can get 100% European linen shorts and dresses for $30, luxe swimwear, Italian leather platform sandals. There's also more. The best part, everything with Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than what you'd find at similar brands.
By working directly with top artisans and cutting out the middlemen, Quince gives you luxury without the markup. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes.
Treat your closet to a little summer glow up with Quince. Go to quince.com/hysteriapod for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/hysteriapod to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/hysteriapod. Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, I feel like AI is being just pushed on us left and right. I don't particularly care for it. I don't really want to use it.
I don't want to use it.
And I keep having these uses for it, like, suggested to me. And I'm like,
what?
Why? Okay, so this week there was this, like, tech bro who was like, picture this. Before bed, I type in that I want to plan my kid's birthday party next week for $500 and, like, send invitations to these people and plan a trip for my wife and me. It's like, can you think of anything you'd want to outsource less than planning a fun event for your,
no.
for your loved one?
No. Because then you didn't plan it.
Then you didn't plan. Would you use AI to plan a vacation?
No. No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't use it for a jam recipe. I wouldn't use it. As far as I go, Erin, is asking the YouTube dads for how to fix my garage door. That's where I draw the line.
I enjoy using it for the transcription of voice memos because
I often
receive them when I'm in a context where I can't necessarily hold my phone up to my ear and listen to it. Like I'm trying to make my baby go to sleep or something.
I agree with that.
But other than that, like, oh my God, I feel
stay out of my house.
I feel like tech bros do not understand how people have fun and where normal people derive enjoyment in their lives. And we are really seeing that with the way that they're trying to push out AI products on the general population.
It's ridiculous.
Got a good show for you this week. We've got some news that is not fun news, but it's important to discuss.
Yeah. Interesting. Things worth talking about.
Things worth talking about because I think that people need to keep in mind that, like, all of the worst case scenarios have actually happened and are actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
And just because they're not happening to you specifically right now doesn't mean that they won't happen to you.
Also, we talk about how we were right and Donald Trump does not understand tariffs.
Yep, we were correct. He does not understand tariffs. Dumb and lazy. Our president is dumb and lazy.
So is Kristi Noem. We talked about that too.
So is Kristi Noem. We also have a really fun interview with author mm-hmm. Sophie Gilbert. I got to talk to her about her new book, which I really loved because mm-hmm. Sophie and I are the same age and we lived through the same pop culture horror that was the 2000s. And she wrote a whole book on it and it's excellent. And it was a really fun conversation. We also talk about Manly Men. Manly men of the
manly tech sphere. is up for debate.
We talk about the marketing of manliness, both by people who want to be manly very desperately, aka
yes.
tech bros, who in the 90s would have been called nerds, and people selling masculinity as a way to enhance themselves while lying about what caused them to actually be really swole. So it's a fun episode. Then we get to Sani Petty.
And we're both Sani.
We're both Sani this week, which is rare. Which is mm-hmm. rare. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who know that habeas corpus is not the name of a right that the president has. Alyssa, what
exhausting.
Did you make of...
You know what I made of it, Erin? How fucking lazy can people be? Siri exists. Before you go to a hearing, can't you just be like, Siri, give me the definition of habeas corpus? Like, how lazy?
I feel like Christy Noem is dumber than the puppy she shot.
Yeah, the poor puppy. Leave the puppy out of it. The poor puppy.
No, I mean, like, she is shockingly dumb. She is
dumb and lazy.
Shockingly dumb and lazy. I feel like dumb and lazy is sort of the blueprint for this administration.
Pete Hegseth, dumb and lazy.
Dumb and lazy. But I think at least Pete Hegseth is a little bit fiery and emotional and funny in front of a camera. Like, like the clip of him, like,
he does TV. Raging, he does TV good.
Him raging at the egg roll was very good television.
When he scared his own kids.
Him freaking out at the White House Easter egg roll was very funny. But look, you know, Christy Noem, I don't expect her to be smart because, you know, as the New York Post reported like a little over a year ago, she was having an affair with Corey Lewandowski. So,
like a lot of people have.
I know. That is
so
not
weird.
But that is not a smart person move, I would say.
No, no. He lacks anything I'd be looking for personally.
Yeah. Yeah, and I feel like she also needs, I'm going to say this, and it's mean but true because I'm critiquing her choices.
Okay.
She needs a injection intervention. She needs to stop putting things in her face.
She needs to go see whoever Kris Jenner saw because that's a miracle of modern science.
Oh, my God.
It's like unbelievable.
She got somebody on social media said that she got Lohan'd. Kris Jenner looks amazing.
She looks like Khloe. I mean, no, Courtney. She looks like Courtney. She looks exactly like Courtney now.
I
thought it was a filter. I spent a lot of time on that this morning when I woke up.
You were like, is this real? Is this AI? I mean, why do we really need plastic surgery in the age of, like, incredible
AI? I don't
AI?
Know, but it was, look, I will probably never do anything to my face. I already look fucking older than I am now, but man, that was a miracle of modern science. It made me think twice about my choices.
All you have to do, well, here's the thing, though, with, like, AI and, like, advanced filters, you can have everyone in the world think you look a certain way. The only thing that you have to do is not let anybody ever see how you really look.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Right? Just live behind a filter all the
time.
That
was extraordinary. Christy Noem, take note.
Christy Noem, the level of, just stupidity.
If you're going to do it right.
Dumb and lazy, a bad combination, but it seems to be kind of the driving two traits in this administration. And the people that aren't dumb and lazy are evil and ambitious.
Stephen Miller.
Stephen Miller is like evil and ambitious. He is like, he's made of schemes, as we said.
He is made of schemes.
He's made of schemes. All right, we're going to start this week by talking about a story that is like truly horrifying.
Horrifying.
And it's one of the reasons why the existence of stories like this is why I kind of tapped out. I didn't kind of tap out. I fully tapped out on Handmaid's Tale because
Me too.
I was like, it's
absolutely
too much crossover.
I can't do it.
So, Alyssa, why don't you give us a rundown of what's going on?
Well, Aaron, in Georgia, Adriana Smith, a 30-year-old pregnant woman, was declared brain dead after having multiple blood clots. She went to the hospital. They sent her home. She went home, blood clots. Now she's back in the hospital because they didn't pay proper attention to her the first time. Now she's being kept alive by machines for over 90 days because of the state's abortion ban. The LIFE Act, which was passed in 2019 but came into full effect after Roe was overturned in 2022. Under this law, abortion is illegal after 6 weeks. When Smith was declared brain dead, she was 9 weeks pregnant. According to her mother, April Newkirk, the family has no say in the matter but is still financially responsible for the care of keeping her alive. In a statement given to Reuters, Georgia's Republican Attorney General Chris Carr said, quote, "There is nothing in the LIFE Act that requires medical professionals to keep a woman on life support after brain death. Removing life support is not an action with the purpose to terminate a pregnancy." So who disagrees? Emory Healthcare, which runs the hospital and has not responded to the attorney general's comments. What?
Okay, so I was reading more about this. This is absolutely horrible for Adriana Smith and her family.
Horrible.
Just completely horrible. One thing that you know, Georgia's Republican AG is like, no. They can totally. This isn't an abortion.
Right.
The hospital, though, is like they just want to cover their asses because
totally.
That's what medical establishments do. But also, if you read more about this, like in other articles, the person who wrote the Life Act said that this would constitute abortion. Yes. And the confusion around whether it is or is not abortion is why the hospital is erring on the side of covering its own ass. And I'm not like defending the hospital. The hospital
is like— No, but this is the whole point. All these decisions have made such a fucking mess of everything that nobody knows what the correct and legal thing to do is.
Well, this is why we shouldn't have lawyers writing medical, like—
100%.
—courses of care. Like, we shouldn't have— like, you went to law school— You don't know, like, how many, like, if you're trying to write, like, laws around, like, abortion and reproductive rights, like, okay, how many layers of tissue do you have to cut through for a cesarean section? Just say that.
Right.
Like, a qualifying question. There should be a little quiz, like, you know, like, when you're trying to log in somewhere and they're like, the I am not a robot, click on all the squares.
Right.
It's like, click on all the medically accurate statements before you're allowed to, like, write laws around this. It is so awful. Also, like... There have been cases in the past of women who have been pregnant and gotten in, like, serious car accidents and been declared brain dead and, like, remained on life support and delivered a baby. But they've usually been, like, very pregnant, like, past 30
weeks. And had the support of their fam. Like, it's—and one of the examples that I saw a point somebody made on social media was, like, if I were brain dead and the state can't take my organs— to transplant to save somebody's lives. Mm-hmm. So why should they be able to do this?
Yeah, why should the state be legally allowed to use your brain dead body as an incubator?
Right.
And I'd imagine that the doctors that are providing the care, I can't speak for them, but like most doctors I know have like a pretty strong sense of like ethics.
Yeah.
I'm imagining there are a lot of healthcare professionals that are really uncomfortable with what's happening.
Oh, it's disgusting.
It is... Yeah, I mean, who actually gets to make the decision for Adriana Smith? Like, the Supreme
Nobody
Court,
knows.
The hospital, her actual family, like, and the likelihood of a 9-week-old fetus being born successfully without serious problems to a woman whose brain is not participating in the, like, in the pregnancy away, like, the way that a living person's brain would be participating. Like, she's not making the hormones. She's not, like...
Right.
She's not doing the things necessary to sustain a healthy pregnancy. So the likelihood of this child being born, being able, like, surviving the pregnancy and being born is really small. And then who's responsible for this baby?
Right. You know? And all the care it might need. State going to kick in? Donald Trump going to kick in?
Yeah. The family said this is torturing them. Is this, like, is this a pro-family policy?
Doesn't feel like it.
No. And if the baby survives, will the state give it adequate support?
Probably not.
No.
Right? Anybody talking about a fund that's going to be set up for this poor baby? No, you know what's going to happen? What always happens, Erin? Some nice people will take to the internet and do a GoFundMe. That's what will happen. And, like, God bless, you know?
I know, like, but here's the thing. Like, money doesn't... Okay, let's say that this pregnancy is carried... long enough that the baby is able to be born and it has some problems. Money is not enough to make up for the sacrifice that whoever cares for the baby will have to make and that they never wanted to make. And it also should be noted that Adriana Smith is a Black woman. Mm-hmm. And like this country has a pretty awful history of just using Black women's bodies in a way that is a torture.
Yeah. Money would have been the bare minimum.
Money would have been the bare minimum, but this is truly an example. It's a worst case scenario example, right? Because like, if you are somebody who's in your reproductive years, and you are a woman who has sex with men, and you are in your reproductive years, like you could get in a car. Like if you're in Georgia, you something happens to you in Georgia, in Texas, in Idaho, in any of these places, and you are. Brain dead, but maybe barely even pregnant enough to know that you're pregnant. Like, your corpse could basically be used as, like, an incubator.
Yeah.
This is fucking horrifying.
Yep.
Ugh. You know what? I get why Taylor Swift let one of her songs be used in a Handmaid's Tale episode. I think that, like, we're all kind of at a point where we're just like, all right, we've...
If it looks like a duck and it quacks like a duck.
Yeah. There was also there was a bombing this weekend in Palm Springs, California, at a fertility clinic. It was a car bombing attack. Four people were injured. All of the embryos were not harmed. One body was found, and it's suspected to be the perpetrator, who was allegedly motivated by anti-natalist views, believing that nobody should have children. He left behind anti-pro-life writings that indicate that this was a targeted attack on the IVF facility, and federal investigators, they're treating this like an intentional act of terrorism. I feel like a car bomb is pretty obvious. Have you heard of the anti-natalism movement, Alyssa?
You know, I heard of it last weekend when this fertility clinic bombing happened. And I was happy to see, because I'm like, did a little research. Apparently, the anti-natalists just really think there should be no more people. Like, it is pretty straightforward. Yeah. And Reddit took their community down.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it had 10,000 members of people who got together and talked about ways to end life on Earth.
I mean, like, look, that's probably not the best place to go about brainstorming ways to end life on Earth. Like, be a normal person, go to business school and work for Exxon if you want to end life on Earth. Go work for DuPont. There are plenty of better, more productive and profitable ways to end life on Earth than bombing an IVF clinic. I mean, come on. A little bit more. You're trying to prevent people from, like, having kids. Go run for office as a Republican. Get rid of more of the social safety net. Cut Medicaid, cut Medicare, cut everything that could possibly provide any benefits whatsoever to women. That's a much more efficient way to get people to not have kids. Actually, make excuses for young men that are terrible and make bad partners.
And make
them unappealing. Make them like continue to contribute to the disintegration of young manhood. Make a Manosphere podcast, right? Like, there are so many better ways to convince people not to have kids. Don't bomb a clinic.
Don't bomb a clinic. Just stop.
That's so Reddit. I mean,
not anymore.
I'm making fun of it. Like, it was apparently very scary to people who were in Palm Springs.
I'm sure.
The ground shook. I wouldn't be making these jokes if people besides the bomber had died, or if people's embryos had been destroyed. I just think it's like, it's very, I feel like there will be more violence around places where IVF takes place. And I was a little bit surprised that it wasn't like a far right winger who thinks that discarding unused embryos is the same thing as, like, murdering a toddler.
Right.
I was actually kind of surprised.
Which is what we thought.
Right. Right. Because that's, like, you think clinic bombing, it's not left-wingers. You know what I mean? It's not people that are, like, less babies. Like, clinic bombing, usually people that are, like, forced birth. So I was kind of surprised there, but it was a scary thing for a while. I'm glad that there wasn't any more destruction, and I feel like anti-natalism is already hard at work. Though we don't need to bomb anything to accomplish the end goal of convincing people.
Message is being received all on its own.
Absolutely. Meanwhile, coming down the pike, we've got some tariffs shortages possibly hitting. Alyssa, can you tell us a little bit more about what's going on?
Well, Aaron, it seems that after Trump enacted tariffs on China, Walmart has announced that its products would become more expensive. What do you know? What do you know? Yes.
Wait, all of the economists were right and the guy trying to sell us a bad plan was wrong?
Seems so.
What?
Trump does not like the sound of this. He is very upset by Walmart. Took to Truth Social to say, between Walmart and China, they should, as is said, eat the tariffs and not charge valued customers anything. I'll be watching, and so will your customers.
Oh, the shareholders will love that, sir. What a wonderful idea. Let's eat the tariffs. But I thought China was paying the tariffs.
Aaron, well, China's paying the tariffs. Walmart should pay the tariffs. It seems someone's got to pay the tariffs, and Walmart's saying their customers may be paying some of the tariffs. So we're not trying to defend Walmart here, but this is way easier said than done, considering that Walmart has already has narrow retail margins. So there's only so much that they can eat. Now, interesting side note, the Rolling Stone reported that Walmart is now selling 1 ounce gold bars, and Quartz reported that Costco is now limiting its sale of gold bars to one, down from two, because Costco have been selling gold for a while. Why is Costco selling gold? Why is Walmart selling gold? Because, Erin, the stock market is so volatile and gold is considered a stable commodity. So as an example, folks who bought a gold bar from Costco last year paid about $2,700 for a 1 ounce gold bar. Today, that gold bar is now selling for $3,389. So if you sold it, you'd make about $600. Why does it matter? Because during every economic mess, indicating we are indeed in an economic mess, gold has remained stable. And
okay,
now
Fox
it is
News.
Thriving.
Okay. 3 a.m. Fox News commercial.
Just go ahead and buy that gold. But Erin, here's my favorite part of this whole thing, why I think this story is incredible. Is Trump who should eat the tariffs? Would Trump eat tariffs?
No.
If Trump had a company, does he think Walmart should suddenly be, like, who does he think these people are? He wouldn't eat tariffs.
I mean, no company would be like, you know what, we're just going to, no large corporation beholden to shareholders is going to make a decision that, like, harms the shareholders. Like, and I don't like it. I don't think it's a good system, but it's the system.
But he also doesn't understand how the tariffs work. This is the thing. Again, the administration is so lazy. Here's what happens. Freight comes in from China. Tariffs levied. Erin, some of these tariffs that companies are having to pay are like $85 million. So then what happens? Not all companies are liquid and can just throw $85 million down in cash. So what happens? They have to get a line of credit. Guess what? Everyone needs lines of credit now. Guess what's happening? Interest rates are going up. It's like I am not notoriously not financially that smart. I could have told Trump this was going to happen. And I'm guessing that God bless poor, not, I'm not saying poor like I feel for him really, but I'm imagining Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, tried to tell him some of this stuff and he was like, Scott, listen, they're just going to eat the tariffs. It'll be fine. So it's a wreck out in those streets.
Oh, boy. And we are trying to eliminate the Department of Education. This guy went to Penn and he doesn't know how tariffs work. Like, what hope does the rest of America have?
I really don't know.
I don't know. In slightly lighter news, earlier this month, a judge in Michigan struck down the state's 24-hour waiting period before an abortion. Judge Seema Patel said it conflicted with the voter-approved amendment that enshrined abortion rights into the state's constitution in 2022. Patel also overturned a regulation that required abortion care providers to provide a fetal development chart and information about the alternatives. Information about the alternatives. Like, if I was not aware of the alternative, would I be having, like, the alternative to an abortion is to give birth. That's the alternative.
Right. Yes.
Like, the type of law that mandates women be given a list of alternatives is, like, so dumb. It is like, we know what the alternative is, hence my being here to have an abortion.
Right.
I'm trying to avoid the alternative specifically because I know it's happening. If I didn't know birth was going to happen, I would be like, oh, you know what? I'm just going to leave it. It'll probably go away on its own. No, it's like,
I'm just going to take some supplements and hope for the best.
I mean, honestly, penny royalty, blue cohosh, there are ways that women have been.
Sure.
Having self-medicating abortions in the past. These are not generally thought of as safe, given the fact that we hypothetically have modern medicine available to us now that is less likely to cause complications. But for as long as people have been getting pregnant and understanding that at the end of a pregnancy is a birth, there have been ways that women have ended their pregnancies in non-birth, right?
Right.
And whatever. Yes, please, please do inform the young ladies of the alternative to abortion. Like,
it's so exhausting.
So stupid. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we have more hysteria.
Hysteria is brought to you by Honeylove. Spring's here, and you know what that means. Wedding season is officially in full swing. I was just at a wedding last week. Whether you're attending a bridal shower, bachelorette party, or the big day itself, it's time to get dressed up again, and a great outfit always starts with great shapewear. Let's be real. No one has time for shapewear that feels uncomfortable or restrictive. Luckily, you don't have to settle for that. Today's episode is brought to you by Honeylove, the brand that's setting a new standard for shapewear. Honeylove uses targeted compression to sculpt and smooth where you want it and ease off where you don't. That means it's super effective and comfortable to wear all day long. It's shapewear that works with your body, not against it. the difference? You'll feel it and see it immediately. Plus, flexible boning in the side seams prevents it from rolling up or down, so you'll never have to sneakily adjust yourself in public again, even after a night of dancing. Their shapewear features lingerie-inspired design details that you'll want to show off. So if you've got weddings on the brain this season, Honey Love has got you covered, literally.
And here's the best part. For a limited time, you can get Honeylove on sale. Save 20% off your entire order with our exclusive link, honeylove.com/hysteria. Support the show and start your summer off right by checking them out at honeylove.com/hysteria. I'm going to say this about Honeylove, Alyssa. It is the only shapewear that I will wear. I will not.
I agree with that. I wore some to the wedding.
Yeah?
Yeah,
were you comfortable the whole time? Everything?
I was. I was curious if I would be. It was a real test because I was in the car 2 hours to the wedding, then at the wedding, then the car 2 hours home. Whoa. And unlike previous shapewear, it did not roll down my belly. You know when your belly starts to revolt and it's like, no more. And
yes.
It didn't do that.
And Honeylove isn't just shapewear. They also have really comfy bras. They have a bra called the crossover bra that gives you the support of a traditional bra without using any underwires. It's a bra that you'll actually enjoy wearing and won't want to take off. I can attest to that. I have fallen asleep in mine and not woken up in the middle of the night feeling like I was in some sort of torture device. I've just been like, oh, I slept in this bra. Treat yourself to the most comfortable shapewear on earth and save 20% off site-wide at honeylove.com/hysteria. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off honeylove.com/hysteria. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Experience the new standard in shapewear with Honeylove.
The country feels like it's falling apart right before our eyes, and the people inside it are being silenced.
So we're going to East 26th Street and Nicolet Avenue, which is where Alex Preti was executed by ICE and Border Patrol.
That is not a headline. That is a human life, and it is all happening right now.
Do you worry about your own safety being involved in all this?
Yes, but it doesn't really feel like there's another option, you know?
And of course they use a 5-year-old child as bait. And of course they're doing all these horrible, bad things because they don't know what they're doing. They've been told that they're going to get rid of the worst, then they have absolute immunity. And they've been told that nothing they do will they ever be held accountable for.
On my show, Runaway Country, we go where the headlines hit home, from communities under threat to the people fighting to be heard. New episodes of Runaway Country drop every Thursday. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or watch on YouTube.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that will never encourage you to eat raw organs.
Disgusting.
Did you watch any videos of the Liver King?
I watched some. Okay.
Some is, there's a lot of, there's a lot of yardage in that word.
This,
like, what do you mean? Like some like three or some like 30?
Some like one. Okay.
And you were because like, I get it.
I was like, I'm picking up what they're putting down. Not a lot needed here.
Uh-huh. I think something that you know, we here at Hysteria are gluttons for punishment, and we love,
can't get enough.
We can't get enough of it. We've got an eye on the culture that is pushing this country in a terrible direction. In one way, as you'll hear in my interview that I'm about to do, in one way we're encouraging women to like be homemakers and live soft lives. In another way, that culture is pushing us in an undesirable direction is this kind of new masculinity.
Alleged masculinity.
Alleged masculinity that is very performative, very much a scam.
Not what I would call masculine.
And very much perpetuated. It's like it's drag, essentially.
Yeah,
it's
totally.
It is like a performance of masculinity that involves things like training to be a fighter. When
yes.
The biggest fight that you're going to have is with traffic getting into San Francisco.
Or your steroid dealer.
Yeah, exactly. Or like the fight to get a good deal on your brand new Porsche Cayenne. Like you're not a fighter. You are not, this is not a world for fighting. We don't currently have a war that welcomes 45-year-old tech execs. So they're training for fights. The boys are fighting. There's a New York Times feature out this week on tech bros and crypto bros who are spending tons of money on participating in the martial arts like it is the 1980s, and they just saw The Karate Kid, and they're begging their dad to let them join a dojo. I find this whole... This kind of whole masquerade by these guys where it's extreme inside boys deciding that they want to be strong men, very pathetic, but also telling about the direction the culture is going. I don't think that being I think the physical fitness is great, and I think it should be encouraged, and I think that we should do things structurally as a society that encourage and invite people to be more physically active. Like, we should design cities around something that isn't cars. We should encourage walking breaks and stand, you know, we should make it affordable for people to work out at gyms. We should make public spaces welcoming for people to like move around and exercise and go outside. And I completely support the idea of like promoting physical fitness and for people to get up and move to the extent that they can. That's good.
Yeah.
But I think getting together and like having big punching matches, like we can't help but notice that like mixed martial arts, like MMA and the Manosphere and tech crypto bros, it's all kind of become this ugly little glob that still offers no value to women. How, Alyssa, do you think that the tech bro push to like become a fighter, what do you think that says about this current moment, and do you think it says about masculinity?
I got to tell you, I listened to the Zuck interview on Rogan back in the fall, mm-hmm. where all they did was talk about their fighting and their jujitsu and all that shit. And Zuck goes on to say so many classic things. One, he's so out of his depth that it's so clear he is like trying to play a part, mm-hmm. and Joe Rogan is actually the real thing. Like, I give it to Joe Rogan; it's who he is fundamentally, right?
Right, and that is a legitimate interest that a person can have, right?
Right?
I think that these guys are wearing it like a costume, though, where they're like,
because every question Joe Rogan asked him when they got into the fighting, the bulking up, the working out of it all, Zuck got like this different tone in his voice. Like, he kept being worried about what the next question was going to be because he like really didn't know the people.
He studied for some MMA
Joe Rogan tests. Was like, and then there's this guy, you know him, right? And he's like, yeah. He's like, he had no fucking idea who this like very famous fighter was, right? But in the interview, Zuck goes on to say how his wife, like when he hasn't done his like training, boxing, jujitsu, whatever it is for the day, she likes it so much better when I go do it. Because I'm like, I get all my aggression out and I'm like a better person later. And like when he's going to have a really bad day at work, like he goes and does this because it like gets it all out. Really? Really? You're having such high stakes. You can't even figure out how to get disinformation off your fucking website. Like you're having such high stakes days at the office that you can't get it, like you can't sort it out. Mm-hmm. It's just, I think it's very boring. I think they're all very boring. It's like they just found something and they're like, I don't know. They're like, they're not even interested. Like, I try to relate it to something. And it's not even like when I tried to do pole dancing back in the early 2000s. You know what I mean? Because I was like in on the fucking joke. You know what I mean? I was Hannah Horvath doing pole dancing. Yeah. And I knew that. And he's like not in on it. And he is Hannah Horvath trying to do jujitsu, and he just mm-hmm. doesn't know it. And yeah. it's not making him a better or more interesting person. You know, these people, these places that he wants to play in, they accept him because he's rich, not because he suddenly has a thick neck, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, it reminds me of something that the worst person that I ever dated said to me that is nevertheless incredibly true. And that is, the smart girls want to be pretty and the pretty girls want to be smart. And
sure.
by that, he means that everyone focuses on their problem areas. A lot of people can be won over by being told that there's something that they're insecure about not being. Right?
Right.
Like, and totally. I think these tech bros joining these fighting leagues, not because they like enjoy it and it's a personal thing. They join fighting leagues because they want to show people something. They want to prove something. It is like them performing a thing that they've always been told that they aren't or they can't have.
Yeah.
And it feels like I think that not to be an armchair psychologist, but it feels very like psychologically revealing. Like you are doing this because you want people to look at you and say, you're somebody that does this. You're a strong, tough man. But right. like, is there anything, I will posit this. In our culture, there is something very feminine about doing something to be looked at. In our culture.
Sure.
I'm not saying
sure.
that's good. I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying it's bad. But like to be a woman is to be looked at. And to do something as a man for the purposes of being looked at, I think that's girly. I think it's girly.
I co-sign. I agree with you on that.
I think it's girly. I think that there's some. I think there's nothing wrong with taking care of yourself and wanting to be strong and wanting to feel at home in your body. That's great. Love it for you. But like, why am I looking at it? Why do I need to? Why do I need to see it? Like,
and
I don't.
You know what? Here's the other thing I would say. Back to the Zuck Rogan interview, is he talks about how the world needs to be more masculine. He doesn't define. He kind of just defines it as muscly, right? Mm-hmm. Needs to be. Guy's got like 2-3 daughters who are going to hear this someday. Is that fucking masculine?
I think
that your daughters are like that. That people should be less like them. Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty fucking. Dumb.
Well, you know the kind of, it's almost a tired trope, but I feel like it's a trope because there's some like truth at the base of it. The trope that like a woman will be getting ready for a party and a man will be like, I'm going to go mow the lawn, or like goes and does yeah. some like side quest that is not yeah. part of getting ready for the party. Like right now we're sort of at a gender relations crisis, right? Mm. We're like trying to get ready for this new reality of living in like an era of climate change, of living in an era of rising global fascism, of media factionalism, of like the obfuscation of truth itself. We're all trying to prepare for that. And men are like, I'm going to join an MMA league. You're fucking weed whacking at a time like this, really? Like we need you to focus on like being better members of society, of contributing to your families if you choose to have families, of like being helpful, useful contributors. We don't sure. need you punching things. This is not
or at
the
least
time.
Don't make it your whole fucking personality.
It's not helping. That's the thing. Like, it's fine. It's a leisure thing, but like, that's not what we need you to be doing right now.
No.
We need you to be coming up with solutions to problems. I thought you were problem solvers. Doesn't your company exist to solve problems?
No.
Aren't you problem solving? This is not. No. You are.
He's a problem maker, actually.
You are washing the car. And our 6-year-old's party is in an hour, okay? Like, do what we need you to do. I also wanted to talk a little bit about the Liver King. All these manly men, and especially young men. I don't want to, like, totally make fun of them. I think that, like, you're a young guy. You're just, like, trying to figure out what the world is and you want to look a certain way. I think with a little bit of exposure to the world that doesn't give you any savviness, you might fall prey to a lot of the scammers that are out there. One such scammer or grifter is a man that we are calling, that calls himself the Liver King. Alyssa, before this, had you heard of the Liver King?
I had not. I had not heard of the Liver King. Blessedly.
The Liver King is a pinkish purple man.
He is, indeed.
An influencer who would show himself like performing bizarre feats of strength, and he said that he was eating a diet of liver, bull testicles, and animal blood,
mm-hmm.
Which he credited with his extremely, he said he was built the way he was built because that's what he was eating. Mm-hmm. But of course, normal people can't hack it. They're not going to like bathe in animal blood and be like, you know, like eat a primitive diet or like as he described. So what he did was say that you actually can have the same results of what I'm doing by taking these supplements that I'm selling. Mm. He built a $100 million business selling ancestral living supplements with his larger-than-life content. But it fell apart when it was revealed that he was actually injecting himself with $11,000 worth of steroids.
What do you know? What do you know?
There's a new Netflix documentary with a Tiger King-like feel that kind of highlights his rise to fame and how toxic male role models can be basically manufactured on the basis of marketable lies. Alyssa, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
If the Liver King's results were actually achievable by just taking the supplements, then why was he still eating organs? Like, you could just take the supplements.
Do you want to know why?
Why?
Because do you know how the Liver King was born?
How?
The Liver King went to an ad agency. Here's something that's so masculine for you. The Liver King went to an ad agency because he wanted 1 million followers.
Okay.
And according to The Independent, once the Liver King was comfortable with bench pressing underwater and aiming firearms at veggie burgers, the ad agency knew he was able to produce snackable content perfect for social media. The Liver King's feats were, he said, acts of meticulous architecture, said the marketing agency. Aaron, he is a sad little bitch who went to a marketing agency and was like, I want more followers. And they were like, do wild shit on the internet. And he was like, okay, that's all he is.
Yeah.
Is it?
I mean, a lot of times these people that we suddenly, pop up and are everywhere are not, it's not an accident. There's very little organic virality. Right.
And then what happened when everyone found out he was shooting up steroids? He lost his mind.
He went crazy. I feel like he probably was already part of the way there with the $11,000 worth of steroids a month.
It's not good for the brain.
That'll get you part of the way there, for sure. Like, that is not a sustainable amount of steroids.
No.
And, I think that it's – I wanted to talk about this guy just because I think – he is maybe a more extreme example of something that's being sold to young men. And also another example of, like, you're doing something. No woman is asking for you to do this. Nobody is. If you're, like, looking to attract
women.
Not
even his liver queen.
Yeah. Is she officially a queen?
She's liver queen.
Or a queen consort?
She goes by liver queen.
Oh, okay. She goes by queen.
FYI.
That's her official royal.
Yeah.
Does she use the HRH on...
We'll have to ask Charles about that.
If the Liver King, he's got sons, right? If the Liver King's sons were to marry people that the family disapproved of, could we see the Liver King's sons and the new wife going to another country and maybe the Liver Princess starting a lifestyle brand that a lot of people make fun of?
If someone else tries to get in on my jam, I'm going to be real mad.
They're making animal organ jam. They're making
sausage.
Liver jam. Oh, yeah. Sausage is kind of liver jam, isn't it? That's gross.
Kinda. I'm sorry, Liz.
Oh, why did I say that? I hate that. I just think it's like... you and I both subscribed recently to a anti-feminist, like right-wing magazine that
haven't gotten my magazine, by the way.
Oh my God, go to the website and request it.
I'm going to.
Post haste, because otherwise, if you don't get it soon, I'm going to literally scan every single page and send you and print it out and FedEx it to you so you get like a version. It's very glossy. It's very beautiful, but it's very well moneyed. There is a lot of money behind selling different versions of masculinity and femininity, and some of it is being sold specifically for like selfish reasons. Like the Liver King wanted to get rich by selling this, right?
Yeah.
But there's something more insidious going on with other ways that femininity and masculinity are being packaged and sold to us right now. In some contexts, it's part of a larger right-wing plot, and I know I sound like I'm wearing a tinfoil hat right now.
No, it's out in the open.
It's part of a larger right-wing plot to sell something that made a lot of people sad in the 50s and then again in the 80s. And that it's trying to finesse a return to a single-income household and finesse this like concept of an emotionally distant, emotionless man who participates in his family by earning money, and that's it. Like, it's trying to bring us back to something. And I think that, like, the more cognizant of the bullshit we all are, the more we can at least be beacons of don't fall for it in our own lives.
Totally.
And among our own, like, male relatives. Because
I'm just sitting here looking at pictures of the Liver King. This is what you've done to me.
You're gonna get served up some strange ads. You're gonna
believe me, my Instagram's gonna be so fucked now after this.
I'm sorry. You're gonna have to uninstall it and reinstall it.
I'm gonna have to, because I just can't get over it now. I have so many tabs of Liver King open.
I had to uninstall and reinstall TikTok because I kept looking at the Yellowstone National Park TikTok page.
Yeah.
That has the OnlyFans model at the beginning, and then it transitions to like a picture.
Yeah.
So I like was going to all the different national park TikToks because they all were doing that. They were all like putting thirst traps at the beginning of the videos, and it was like a very funny repeated joke. But then I started getting served up that person's videos, and I like, no disrespect, earn your money, my friend, but like I just was like, why? I don't want my feed to be dominated by this. Come on. So I had to uninstall TikTok and reinstall it because my algorithm got all messed up because of the national parks. And it's going to happen to you, too, because of Liver King.
The Liver King.
Anyway, don't fall for it. Don't fall for the Liver King. He looks like that because he's been taking steroids. that's
and he doesn't even look like that anymore. He's a wreck.
No. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I interview the author of Girl on Girl, How Pop Culture Turned a Generation of Women Against Themselves, Sophie Gilbert. Stick around.
Hysteria is brought to you by Nutrafol. Hot days, humid nights, and nonstop plans. All that heat can increase hair shedding, while a packed schedule can add stress, which can impact your hair. Nutrafol's whole body approach and clinically tested formulas support your hair from within so you can focus on living your best life all summer long. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand, trusted by over 1.5 million people. See thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding in just 3 to 6 months with Nutrafol.
Thinning hair is different for men and women, so a one-size-fits-all approach to hair growth doesn't cut it. Nutrafol has multiple formulas for men and women that are tailored to different life stages, like postpartum or menopause. I use the postpartum one, and I gotta say, it's really nice to not have, like, clumps of hair falling out of my head anymore.
Look at my menopause-supported hair.
No, like, that's a real thing that happens after you have a baby. Yes. You get, like, a hormone crash, and then, like, your hair starts falling off. And it's very disturbing. And since I've started taking Nutrafol, like 3-4 months ago, it has just, it has stopped.
Your hair looks gorgeous.
Anymore. I'm not shedding anymore. And
proof is on your head.
The proof is in the pudding. Building a hair growth routine is easy. Order online, no prescription needed. Enjoy free shipping, automated deliveries, and up to 20% savings with a Nutrafol subscription. Plus, get free naturopathic doctor consults and a Headspace meditation membership.
Start your hair growth journey with Nutrafol. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month's subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code Hysteria10. Find out why Nutrafol is the best-selling hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code Hysteria10. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code Hysteria10.
The country feels like it's falling apart right before our eyes, and the people inside it are being silenced.
So we're going to East 26th Street and Nicolette Avenue, which is where Alex Preti was executed by ICE and Border Patrol.
That is not a headline. That is a human life, and it is all happening right now.
Do you worry about your own safety being involved in all this?
Yes, but it doesn't really feel like there's another option, you know?
And of course they use a 5-year-old child as bait. And of course they're doing all these horrible, bad things because they don't know what they're doing. They've been told that they're going to get rid of the worst, then they have absolute immunity. And they've been told that nothing they do will they ever be held accountable for.
On my show, Runaway Country, we go where the headlines hit home, from communities under threat to the people fighting to be heard. New episodes of Runaway Country drop every Thursday. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or watch on YouTube.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who survived the year 2007 and lived to tell the tale. Our guest today is a staff writer at The Atlantic, a Pulitzer Prize finalist, and author of the new book, Girl on Girl, How Pop Culture Turned a Generation of Women Against Themselves. Sophie Gilbert, welcome to Hysteria.
Thank you so much for having me.
First of all, thank you for writing the book. I finished it. Oh my God, I loved it. You've been writing about feminist issues for years. What gave you the idea for this book specifically?
It was sort of this moment in time when I think my stories all seem to be circling the same period, the late 90s, the 2000s. There seemed to be something there that hadn't quite been, or was, you know, there was a lot of sort of reconsideration of the era happening in culture. I think certainly of the late 90s, of people like Monica Lewinsky and Tonya Harding, and then of Britney Spears. And I just felt like there was a lot, I think, that had happened to me personally during this era that I hadn't quite ever come to terms with. And then after Roe v. Wade was overturned, it just seemed to me that we had had this period of, I mean, I don't need to tell you guys, but this period of real profound backlash, and the progress that I had assumed I think would be inevitable in my life seemed out of reach. And very smart people were passing the politics of that moment, but it seemed to me to make sense to look at the culture that had shaped, I think, millennial women and also Gen Z women, and to see what happened to us during that era, how it defined us, what it made us think of ourselves and of other women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's been a lot of, I mean, we were born the same year, you and I.
Oh,
and
wow.
I feel like there is a lot of like unfucking of my head that has had to take place. And it seems from reading the book that 2007, I never put together all of these pieces of like just horrible things in retrospect that happened in 2007. It was kind of the apex of an expression of like hating women in popular culture that was building for some time. Can you talk a little bit about what happened in 2007?
Yeah. So the reason I came to realize this was because I was writing about the Anna Nicole Smith documentary on Netflix, and realized that within like a few weeks of her death, I think, was Britney shaving her head. And I just did not remember those two events happening in such kind of close quarters together in history. But I did remember 2007 being this very chaotic year. And then when I went back, it was just like this long rolling list of sort of drama for women in the public eye, and of crisis, of, I think we can see now, of profound mental health crisis. But, you know, it was obviously Britney being stalked by paparazzi, Anna Nicole Smith. I think that was the year that Paris Hilton went to jail. It was the year that Lindsay Lohan went to rehab. Like, there was just this nonstop TikTok coverage of very famous women falling apart in public, and obviously the public nature of that exacerbating the crisis that they were going through. But I realized in my research, it was also the year that Hillary Clinton announced she was running for president for the first time. And it just made me think, like, what did it mean to me in this moment? Like, what did I think women were capable of when everywhere I looked, there was this sort of nonstop barrage of women seeming to sort of fail as publicly and as dramatically as they could.
Mm-hmm. And you also write about how in 2007, around that time, there was like disgust, like open contempt and disgust aimed at female celebrities. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I remembered, I think, pieces of it. And some of the tenor of it, I think we've revisited. Amanda Hess wrote a really good piece for the New York Times about revisiting the Britney Spears VMAs performance from 2008 and how horrific it seemed in the sort of modern context of this 25-year-old woman being forced to do a sexy dance, was her term, I think, so she could keep her children. But I remembered the cruelty, and yet when I went back to research the language that was used on blogs like Paris Hilton, and also in places like TMZ, there was a blog called Hollywood Tuna that was particularly cruel. And there was this real sense of vitriol, but also, as you said, disgust that was aimed at these women. And this sense that they were failing at the project of celebrity, they were failing at the project of womanhood. And despite the fact, I think, that many of these women were famous because we just could not stop looking at them, and we could not stop reading about them, and we were fascinated with these details of their lives in a really kind of prurient way, we were also, I think, in some ways sick of them. And that element of overexposure, I think, seemed to come through in this language of disgust, like this real tenor of taking them apart. And it's been interesting. I think I've learned more recently that disgust is actually a very powerful emotion politically, because it tends to be associated with more conservative worldviews. Like, if you feel disgusted by something, you're much less open-minded about it. You're much more judgmental in your thinking. And so it was particularly interesting for me, I think, more recently to see the same language of disgust being used against, say, Kamala Harris in 2024, and certainly against Hillary Clinton in 2016.
Mm-hmm. You know, we've been talking about the Diddy trial on this podcast, and, mm-hmm. you know, it's some of the information that is coming to light and some of the testimony. I couldn't help but think, as I was reading your book, like, some of the events that are being discussed in the Diddy trial were happening behind the scenes, parallel to things that you write about in your book. Have you been following the trial, and does it give you more context to some of the cultural events that you were writing about?
I have been following the trial. The allegations against him, unfortunately, arrived just after the book was finished. So I was able to add like one parent in one chapter, noting it was in the music chapter in the 90s, just because he had such power in the industry. And that, I think, is the thing that is really astonishing to me now. When you think about people like him and Harvey Weinstein, it's not just the power that they had over other artists. It's the power that they had over all of us, like over our imagination, mm-hmm. over our, like, our sense of desire, like our sense of pleasure. I mean, this real, the way that they all colored the sort of landscape that we grew up against, I think, has been really striking to me now in terms of I love the word unfucking. I tend to use the word unlearning because I'm not often allowed to swear. But the same, I think the same process, is so much of it is like understanding the ways in which these men shaped our childhoods, our youth, our teenage years, our like the stories that really helped define us all. I think that's the thing that is so striking to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, Diddy was a producer on one of the albums that you mentioned in the music chapter that was like you single out as being an example of like feminist art. So and Harvey Weinstein was also like very influential in making movies that sometimes dictated what we thought feminism was, what we thought empowerment was. And it's really messed up to look back and be like, oh, okay. Oh, I guess P. Diddy was behind that, and he was doing all these horrible things at the same time that he was pushing this piece of art into the public that, like, was actually helping people. He was, like, doing it. Just it is a real, like, it's a mind fuck. You also write about how girl power went from a serious political statement to a hollow marketing tool. I'm just going to read a paragraph from your book that really, like, it was in an early chapter and it really stuck with me. You write, "For millennial girls, buying things was suddenly being presented as a political act, one that negated the need for other kinds of activism. To invert a quote from The Handmaid's Tale, the Riot Girl movement wanted women to have freedom from sexual violence, abuse, injustice, fear. The Spice Girls embodied freedom too. Have fun, earn money, pursue pleasure. There are no prizes for deducing which ideology was easier to package and sell." So reading that, that paragraph, kind of every single chapter had a moment where it felt like something was actually being distilled into the fluffiest, most marketable possible component of any advancement and sold back to us. Is there any avoiding the collapse of female advancement into a marketing tool? Like, has any movement that has become popular among women escaped this fate?
It was so striking to me in that chapter, because I was curious about how we got from girl power in terms of the ways in which, like, Bikini Kill used it. The idea was that they would put two words together that no one would naturally associate. And there was a real agenda in doing that. Like, the words girl and power, put together, they were supposed to make you think about why we wouldn't put those words together, why they don't naturally seem to align. And there was so much sort of force behind that and so much activism and so much intention. And then the Spice Girls came along, obviously, and they reclaimed the slogan girl power. But the ways in which they used it just didn't mean anything anymore. Mm-hmm. And then, as you mentioned, they were just these incredibly powerful, like, salespeople. One fact I found for the book that really blew my mind was that within their first year and a half as a band, they had $500 million worth of branding and commercial deals. Someone told me while I was doing short book tour that they had a Spice Girls toaster. I mean, it was just like this real, anything you could buy, I think, in the mid-90s that had a Spice Girls logo on it. And what that did was reveal to people in power how powerful teenage girls were as a demographic and how much spending money they had, because, you know, they had babysitting money, they had jobs, like short part-time jobs. They didn't have mortgages. They loved to spend money at the mall. And once brands figured that out, I think it was really the end of everything, because it just made people see how powerful teenage girls could be as salespeople, and how basically there was a huge demographic that would buy anything that was sold to them by these particularly sexy and fun to watch teenagers. Is there a way to escape it? I mean, I was talking about this earlier because it's so interesting to me that all the sort of self-made female billionaires are making their fortunes on the back of beauty brands. And we seem so susceptible to beauty brands. And I personally know I'm very susceptible, especially in my 40s. Like, please, God, get rid of my eye bags. But but I do think the only way that we'll ever sort of unlearn it is to just be aware, that these things are always going to be sold to us with the insinuation that we ourselves are not enough. And when you start to see that and to question it in media and in marketing, it sort of feels like a small kind of power.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, Sophie, reading this book was like a crazy experience for me because, like I said, we were born the same year. And I feel like we were living parallel lives during the duration of the book. Like, I was working at Jezebel when the publication put out a bounty for the unretouched Lena Dunham photo from Vogue that you mentioned in the chapter about girl on girls. I interviewed a woman that Terry Richardson, she alleged that Terry Richardson had assaulted her. Yeah. I reviewed the book Girl Boss for the New York Times. When I was reading it at the time, I remember thinking, like, this is really trite, but I didn't want to be mean because I was scared of Sophia Amoroso. Like, she seemed like she would come at me because she'd come at one of my coworkers at Jezebel before. And I was like, I don't want to, listen, lady, I don't want any fight with you. I was writing for Best Week Ever when Amanda Bynes was having her breakdown. And oh my God, felt weird that we were, like, dogpiling on her because she was clearly not okay. Yeah. I had friends that were targeted by Gamergate, which you also write about. You quoted, like, several of my former coworkers in your book. I felt like I was reading a book about a life that me and so many other millennial women had lived. And each chapter kind of was messed up in ways that I, like, either didn't fully understand or that I'd forgotten or that I'd never fully acknowledged. Like, what chapter for you was the most jarring to revisit with adult eyes?
Yeah, I think it was... Chapter 6 is definitely the darkest chapter in the book. And I wanted to say, too, like, Jezebel was so ahead of the curve on reporting on Terry Richardson. Every time I go back now and look for stories and look for people who were sort of talking about him during this era, it was basically Jezebel. Like, they were really kind of leading the charge on just, like, the stories that people were telling about him for a very, very, very long time that didn't seem to matter, I would say, for the good part of a decade until finally they did. But chapter 6 is about this shift towards extremity in all kinds of different media over the course of the 2000s. And I think I start with the movie Hostel, which I had seen years ago, but I hadn't watched in ages. And it was interesting to kind of understand just how... not explicitly pornographic it is, but how sort of eroticized the violence is almost. But also I learned that the Hostel movies were produced by Mike Fleiss, the creator of The Bachelor. So that kind of sets
what?
Off.
That guy's off everywhere.
He really is. And he's also the cousin of Heidi Fleiss, the Hollywood madam. So there are all these, like, ding-dong moments.
Wow.
But also the shift towards extremity that was happening in pornography at the time as sort of culture at large got more sexualized. Porn had to become more extreme to get people to keep paying for it, basically, was the thing that surprised me most about that chapter. And you can really see this shift from the photography of Terry Richardson and the thumbs up and the aviators. When I went back to revisit the photos from Abbey Grabe, like, they just looked like Terry Richardson pictures to me. There was a man in aviator glasses giving the thumbs up with this, like, very winking smile next to, you know, the most horrendous abuses being meted out against Iraqi prisoners. And so much of that visual language of male dominance and of male supremacy, of, like, very sexualized male dominance, seemed to have come not just from porn, but also from this mode of photography that people like Terry Richardson were popularizing. And then the thing that really, I think, shocked me was finding an American Apparel ad from 2010 that actually imitated one of the pictures of Abu Ghraib by staging female models in a human pyramid.
Oh,
and that was just the moment when you're like, oh, God.
Oh, wow.
So much of this was, I think, infiltrating our minds and our consciousnesses at the time. And it seems so transparently abusive now and so transparently offensive. But at the time, I think, because it was edgy, because it was ironic, because it was provocative, because we were all trying hard to be, I think, cool with what was happening to us in that era, it felt very hard to sort of fight back against.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Female Chauvinist Pigs came out in, like, 2005, and it made a big splash, and a lot of people read it, people were talking about it, and then culture just continued on its way. You know, like, it continued kind of toward that path of degradation and feeling like you needed to be okay with it or participate in it as a woman so that you could be, like, a cool girl. You could be one of the girls that was cool and got to hang out with the guys, and one that was, like, didn't take herself too seriously.
Yeah.
You cite Susan Faludi a lot in the book, and you make frequent references to the central thesis of her 1991 book, Backlash. You add your own observations of advancement followed by a sort of cultural clawback. Faludi wrote her book in 1991, and here we are, like, decades later. in another clawback era again. Are we going to just repeat this cycle forever?
It's really, yeah. Oh God, it was so depressing when I went back to read Backlash and she was talking about this moment of, I think she calls it the new traditionalism that happened in the late 80s post-AIDS, where magazines like Good Housekeeping were sort of urging women to return to the home, but couched in this very like nostalgic language of things were just better when women, you know, my mother was at home and she made dinner every night and she wrote Christmas cards by hand, like this very kind of gauzy, trad wifey imagery that was being used in the ads. And it just felt so familiar to right now. And I just felt like, God, obviously, this message is always going to appeal to some women, and that I think is never going to change. And we're always kind of going to, I guess, engage with it as spectators, partly out of a kind of element of wanting to understand the other side. Like when I watch people like Ballerina Farm on Instagram, it really is kind of, I feel like I'm kind of gawking at zoo animals in a way, like the way that people will make every element of a meal from scratch. It just, it feels like a sort of astonishing throwback moment, like I'm watching a Victorian drama. Are we ever going to escape the cycle? I mean, I sort of have to remind myself, and certainly I've been trying to sort of express in interviews that I did not feel all that bleak at the end of the book. I mean, obviously the election was a blow, but when you look at culture and the culture that we have being made for us right now, it is so much better than what we had in the 2000s. There are so many movies being made about that are not, like, in the 2000s there were no women in movies whatsoever. Like, women were scolds, women were shrews, women were like sexy wives who didn't want their husbands to go to Vegas. It was like very, very narrow portrayals of womanhood in the 2000s, if women were present at all. Whereas, like, looking at the Golden Globes this year, you just had all these women in their 40s, 50s, 60s doing the work of their lives in so many ways, like movies about the transition into motherhood and how crazy that can make you in like Night Bitch or The Substance, which I know is controversial in many ways, but just a movie that is willing to engage with the insanity of beauty culture and the horror of the sort of ordeals that it puts women through in order to fit into this mold. Mm-hmm. And Demi Moore, I think, came up in every chapter of my book because she always seemed to be connecting with different ideas about what women are supposed to be in any given era. And so to see her in her 60s, like, winning an award and finally getting a claim for her talent and not for her sex appeal was really powerful to me. And then with TV shows recently, like Dying for Sex, which treat the subject of female desire as its own thing, like not as women sort of performing for men sexually throughout their lives and that being what defines us, but as this question of a woman thinking about, what do I actually want? What do I actually need? That to me feels so different. And so while we do have all these messages that are this really sort of cartoonish misogyny that's flaring up in different elements of the internet, the culture, I would say, writ large, is not affirming those messages. If anything, it's contradicting them. And that feels cheerful to me.
Well, that is a great note to end on, Stephanie Gilbert. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for writing the book. Listeners, Girl on Girl, How Pop Culture Turned a Generation of Women Against Themselves is available in bookstores everywhere. I would offer to lend you my copy, but I have like five people that are like lined up to borrow my copy. Thank you so much for joining me. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, more hysteria. Hysteria is brought to you by Ritual. My local grocery store is a little bit of a crunchy grocery store.
Yeah, me too.
It's a good grocery store, but there's like three aisles of supplements. Like,
so
three,
there are so many supplements out there,
and some of them are just like not even words. It's just like a series of letters and numbers, and I'm like, I don't know. Do I need this?
You're like, is this for me or the cat?
I don't know what this is. Like, what are, is this like a reference to some like exoplanet? Like, is this something that I can put in my body? That's why I just need a one-stop shop. I need something as simple as possible, and I need something that has an actual proven track record and that isn't backed up by just like vibes, you know?
We need more than vibes in our bodies.
We need more than vibes in our bodies. That's why clean supplement company Ritual has pledged to complete clinical trials on all of its products by 2030, with trials already done for best-selling products like their Essential for Women 18+ multivitamin and skin hydration supplement Hycera. You can see all the results and learn more about Ritual's commitment to clinical trials at ritual.com.
Erin, I love my Essential for 18 and over women. I take it every morning. It doesn't give me a stomach ache. That's the biggest problem when I try to take vitamins. most of them you have to take with food in your stomach or something, or you get a stomach ache all day, and not these. You just, you sit down, you have your water, you take your supplement, little minty, fresh aftertaste, mm-hmm. one and done, never forget.
One and done, you never forget. You take care of, you know, the gaps that you might have in your nutrition. Mm-hmm. You make sure that your body has what it needs. Their Essential for Women 18 Plus contains 9 key nutrients in 2 delayed-release capsules designed for optimal absorption per day. It's designed to be gentle on the stomach, like you said, Alyssa, with mm-hmm. a minty essence in every bottle that helps make taking your multis actually enjoyable. It's also third-party tested for heavy metals and Clean Label Project certified, so you know you can trust what you're putting in your body. Ritual multivitamins are vegan, non-GMO, project verified, gluten and major allergen free, and made traceable.
No more shady business. Ritual's Essential for 18 Women and Over is a multivitamin you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month only at ritual.com/hysteria. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 and Over to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/hysteria for 25% off.
The country feels like it's falling apart right before our eyes, and the people inside it are being silenced.
So we're going to East 26th Street and Nicolette Avenue, which is where Alex Preti was executed by ICE and Border Patrol.
That is not a headline. That is a human life, and it is all happening right now.
Do you worry about your own safety being involved in all this?
Yes, but it doesn't really feel like there's another option, you know?
And of course they use a 5-year-old child as bait. And of course they're doing all these horrible, bad things because they don't know what they're doing. They've been told that they're going to get rid of the worst of the worst. Then they have absolute immunity. And they've been told that nothing they do will they ever be held accountable for.
On my show, Runaway Country, we go where the headlines hit home, from communities under threat to the people fighting to be heard. New episodes of Runaway Country drop every Thursday. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or watch on YouTube.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who hate scrolled every single piece of content from Lauren Sanchez's bachelorette party. That looked like not very much fun.
I have to admit, I didn't see it. I'm going to have to go check it out.
You're going to mess up your feed even more.
Wow. Let's see what the Liver King and Lauren Sanchez can do to a feed.
What is the overlap, right? Like, what is the overlap
like it's
between
fillers?
Oh God, it's injecting things in your body so that you look different than you would
that's
naturally
the overlap.
Look. I find Lauren Sanchez kind of fascinating because I feel like she's living in a time that is no longer happening,
and that I never wanted to live through.
I think that she, in her mind, I think it's like 2015, and it's like,
you know, I'm looking this up now.
Remember when like Taylor Swift had her squad?
Oh, of course.
And like, it was almost like she was like aggressively flaunting her friendships in a way that felt like a subtweet to somebody who was not included in the squad. Like in the way that.
Yes.
It was like kind of fun because it was like, wow, look at all these ladies I know hanging out. And that's really cool. And look, there's, you know, one of the Hadids and there's, you know, Lena Dunham and all these. Oh, they're all hanging out together.
This bachelorette party looks dumb.
Alyssa is live reacting to the Lauren Sanchez bachelorette party.
This looks dumb. This looks boring, unfun, and like all the clothing hurt.
Right. Well, and right? The other, it even the robes. Even
everything.
The robes look uncomfortable.
It's everything like, looks uncomfortable.
It all looks very uncomfortable. But, you know, the other thing about Lauren Sanchez is I think, going back to my theory that she's living in 2015, so she's, you know, she thinks it's like, we think it's cute when, like, rich ladies squat up and it's like, no, we don't really think that anymore. And she also, like, the Blue Origin thing also made me think, like, this bitch thinks it's 2015.
Oh, when, my like, goodness. Now I understand. My whole day has come full circle. My Kris Jenner plastic surgery pictures came from the Lauren Sanchez bachelorette party. I didn't realize that at first blush.
Oh, wow.
There we go.
That is a hilarious move to premiere your new incredible face at someone else's bachelorette party.
Get it. And she, the Jenners, Kris Jenner, momagers the shit out of it again, because I didn't know shit about Lauren Sanchez's party, even though I looked at it this morning, because I was only focused on the smooth, well-done situation happening on Kris Jenner's visage.
It's
God. Look at this.
I mean,
Aaron, I really just had a good moment. I really just enjoyed that.
Yeah, no, that was incredible. We didn't even plan that. Just brought the show back around.
Shit.
We're bringing it in for a landing. But before we get to Sandy Petty, we have some announcements for the class. The Crooked Store has a bunch of great new merch, including new designs for our classic Friend of the Pod tee.
This merch drop is part of a big upgrade at the Crooked Store. The site got a makeover, and so did the merch itself. But don't worry, it's a good makeover. Not like that time you cut your own bangs.
Yeah, it's like a Kris Jenner makeover.
Yeah, exactly.
All Crooked merch is now made from higher quality, more durable materials with updated modern fits and more sustainable manufacturing practices.
See the new site and grab a new Friend of the Pod tee at the same old URL, crooked.com/store.
Now let's get to Sandy Petty. I'm going to go first.
Do it.
I was really, really worried about Sesame Street for quite some time.
As we all were.
This is a Sandy and a Petty. Well, the Petty is kind of a warning. Okay. I was worried about Sesame Street because, you know, HBO Max was not a good steward of the brand in mm-hmm. any way, shape, or form. They were like pulling episodes off, and that's not like the spirit of Sesame Street is I should be able to go onto like some streaming service and mm-hmm. watch a little interstitial from 1985 whenever
Absolutely.
I want.
Absolutely.
I should be able to like go dip into that part of my memory whenever I want. And Max HBO was like taking a lot of the episodes down and you had to go to YouTube and it was a whole thing. Also, I've got kids and I want them to be able to watch like good versions of Sesame Street that aren't like broken up with YouTube ads.
I want to watch Aretha Franklin do all the ABCs.
Ooh.
Oh, it's good.
Yeah. So, like, you know, Sesame Street was kind of on the rocks. PBS was on the rocks also mm-hmm. because of the Trump administration. Good news this week, maybe, tentatively.
We're hoping.
Netflix is buying up Sesame Street, and it will stream episodes on its streaming service. Mm-hmm. At the same time, they will still air on PBS.
Excellent. So excellent.
It's not taking it down from PBS, which I think is like...
That's great. I actually didn't understand that when the news came out. I was curious about that.
Yeah, it's the first time that I've been like, oh, maybe I will keep Netflix. The only reason I have Netflix right now is because my husband and I watch... We might need to watch I Think You Should Leave at any time, you know? And it's not available anywhere else. So we just like keep... It's like our emergency I Think You Should Leave subscription that we have every month.
Okay.
But now that Sesame Street's going to be on it, I think I'm not going to end up canceling that one.
Good.
So, sorry, Paramount Plus. You're up next. I'm canceling you.
I've got some that are up next.
Oh, okay. Alyssa, Sandy or Petty?
I have a Sandy. It's like okay. a little sad, but mostly nice.
Okay.
So you know I love the show Sister Wives.
Of course.
Sister Wives is on its 19th season. It's been on for 15 years. I've watched every episode. They're all divorced now, except for the fourth wife. Fourth wife and Cody are still married. But Janelle, who is the second wife, has always been my favorite. There is something about her. She has a can-do attitude. I love everything about her. Mm-hmm. She has a son, Garrison, who was in the Army, came back from the Army, went to nursing school. While he was in nursing school, he started rescuing cats, and he became friends with this rescue. And last year, he died by suicide. And
oh, no.
So while my sister is my witness, she listens to Sandy Petty every week, TLC actually did 3 episodes on his death and the memorial service and everything after. I found their handling of the story thoughtful and not voyeuristic, so kudos to them. But the world's response to Janelle really gave me hope in humanity. And when the news of his death broke, thousands of people from around the world, thousands of people from around the world made donations to his Humane Society. The Aww. High County Humane Society in Arizona. They raised $25,000 to save all the cats. They have waived adoption fees now so people can come in Garrison's honor, they can adopt a cat without a fee. Aww. And it made me feel like humanity was still alive and that, you know, something really bad happened to someone who generally, part of the reason I kind of like the show is aside from the husband, the kids and the moms all seem like kind of really good people, except for Robin. But anyway, it made me, it was like, it, the episodes were very sad, but they actually did an episode where Janelle let them follow her to the Humane Society where they gave her the news and showed her the special adoption room that they did in his honor. And aww. I love the show and it was very sad, but it's nice when the world shows a nicer side, and they did by saving cats. And you know I love cats, so it was mm-hmm. a, like win for win for me. So that's
you're
my
saying. You're about to add a cat, aren't you?
Knock wood. Let's hope everybody likes each other. We're going to find out this weekend.
Oh, okay. Well, I need you to like live update.
I promise you. You know, I go do the freedom ride. We spend a night alone, just me and the little kitties, so I can get a sense. Mm-hmm. And then she meets the crew this weekend. She'll meet Winky and Butthole.
Wow. I'm so excited. I can't wait to see.
Wait till you see. Let's hope everybody likes each other.
Let's hope everybody likes each other. Okay. That's all the time we have for this week's episode of Hysteria. As always, if you want to get in touch, hysteria@crooked.com. A few of us check that inbox, so don't send anything too personal. But we love hearing from you. Tips, feedback, whatever. You guys are all the best. Alyssa, thank you for being my ride or die this week.
Yes,
and every
ma'am.
Week. We'd also like to thank Sophie Gilbert for joining me for the interview and for writing her book. Thank you, listeners, for joining us this and every episode. Next week is a holiday week, so Hysteria will be dark, but we will be back the first Thursday in June. Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on IG, Twitter, and TikTok. Subscribe to Hysteria on YouTube for access to video versions of your favorite segments and other exclusives like This Fucking Guy, our video series. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a nice review. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. And Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer. Claire Fogarty is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. We get audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Our video producers are Rachel Gajewski and Claudia Sheng. And thank you to Daisy Cruz and David Tolles for production and marketing support every week. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
The country feels like it's falling apart right before our eyes, and the people inside it are being silenced.
So we're going to East 26th Street and Nicollet Avenue, which is where Alex Preddy was executed by ICE and Border Patrol.
That is not a headline. That is a human life. And it is all happening right now.
Do you worry about your own safety being involved in all this?
Yes, but it doesn't really feel like there's another option, you know?
And of course they use a 5-year-old child as bait. And of course they're doing all these horrible, bad things because they don't know what they're doing. They've been told that they're going to get rid of the worst, then they have absolute immunity. And they've been told that nothing they do will they ever be held accountable for.
On my show, Runaway Country, we go where the headlines hit home, from communities under threat to the people fighting to be heard. New episodes of Runaway Country drop every Thursday. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or watch on YouTube.